This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lefrak. In the depths of winter, it can feel particularly lovely to get inside a sauna. For the uninitiated, it's a little wood-lined room where you sweat it out. What's it exactly? Well, that's part of what we're going to explore today in our conversation about the physical, mental, and social aspects of sauna culture. This is the first installment in a health-focused series we're running each Thursday of January this year. The series is called In Good Health. Vermont Edition's managing producer, John Ahrens, is a sauna obsessive. If you ever go to saunas in Chittenden or Addison County, I bet you a dollar you've run into him. He put together this little audio love letter to sauna.
Like many people, I try to hit the gym every day after work. But don't get the wrong impression. I'm not there to exercise. No, it's a 6x8 cedar-paneled room set to 190 degrees that draws me in each day. One staffer at Middlebury's Vermont Sun said to her, "This men's sauna seems akin to happy hour at the bar." And she's not wrong. So to give you a sense of this sauna's particular vibe, I assembled a cross-generational group of Middlebury's sauna flies, that's my term of art, to have a conversation where else but in the sauna itself at Vermont Sun. Smokey Lyons is 75 and a self-described drywall and plaster detective.
Hey, Smokey.
Hi.
Jordan Hyatt is a 16-year-old junior at Middlebury High. And Andy Bojanowski, 41, is assistant superintendent at Middlebury Golf Course, caretaker at Eddie Horse Farm, has a firewood business on the side. Andy works one day a week at the front desk of the gym and is basically paid in sauna access.
You guys mind if I put a little rosemary on?
I began by asking Andy and the group about how often they come to the sauna.
If I can come every day, I come every day.
Jordan?
Yeah, probably every day, sometimes three times a day. Like in a row, 40 minutes each.
How about you, Smokey? How often do you think you come?
Most days, I revel to think about it all day.
Yeah, how many people would you estimate you're on a first name basis with and are sauna buddies with? Andy first.
I'd say it's close to 100 people.
100 people?
Yeah.
What about you, Jordan? How many people would you be like, oh, what's up, buddy?
Probably just like 50-ish.
When someone walks through there, I feel like a bowler. I'm rolling a strike. Am I going to get in a conversation with this person?
Yeah.
Oh, you bet I am.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's no doubt in my mind. You ever see a chicken survive in an ice palace? You got to have a hot coop for that chicken to really blow off his feathers. They got to cackle. They got to talk.
You got to strut those hot feathers.
Yeah, you do. And you find out so many people have a great deal of things in common that you would love to experience but haven't yet.
Do you think there's a confessional aspect to being in here?
Without question.
Yeah. Why? I mean, like, it's weird because this is a men's gym locker room sauna. It's a lot of tough guys, you know.
Yes, they lose their toughness. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, their bodies, the heat says, I don't need to be tough in here anymore. I've already done my heavy workout. Mm-hmm. Now I can be just who I want to be right now. Mm-hmm. I don't have to flex anything in here. Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, we strip off our clothes to come in here. And a lot of ways we strip off a lot of what's outside of this room when we come in here. Mm-hmm. And we definitely kind of all go more towards the core of who we are. And we just sit in this room as ourselves.
You get a deeper connection with them because you're putting your body through such exertion that, you know, it's kind of like all I care about right now is just like being myself.
All right, you want to take a break?
Yeah.
You guys ready? All right.
Hey,
I'm overheated.
I don't feel a thing.
After about 20 minutes of getting hot, it was time to take a break and cool down by stepping outside into the 20-degree air. I asked Jordan how he was feeling in these frigid temps.
Yeah, I'm shaking and I'm my feet are numb, but it feels good. I watched the Joe Rogan podcast and he recommends it heavily. He says, you know, heat to cold and then heat again and then back to cold. It's good for you.
Do you think Joe Rogan has had an influence on you and your friends your age is a desire to use the sauna?
Yeah, it makes them feel a lot cooler. I think that's another reason is when you're because if you watch one of his podcasts, you know, he's be talking about how it makes him feel like a man and a alpha and a wolf.
Do you feel like an alpha man wolf?
Right now, I couldn't feel more like an alpha man wolf, you know, sitting with two other alpha man wolves.
You want to head back in?
Yeah, I'll warm my feet up.
It was time to heat up again, So we head back for round two by walking through the locker room and back into the sauna.
Well, he said he was chasing a big fat squirrel under the full moon the other day.
Okay. You know what we're hearing? It's the breathing of the rocks. The earth has a sound of its own and a breath of its own.
Now, here's a question. In your personal life, how often do you find yourself almost saying, well, I was talking to this guy in the sauna the other day, and how often do people you say that to start to make fun of you or rip on you for your sauna habit? I'll start with you, Jordan.
I get that a lot because a lot of the people I see in the sauna, unless it's one of my friends, are quite a bit older than me, and if I tell people that, they're like, oh, you're hanging out with a bunch of old men in the sauna. I'm like, well...
I get it from the other direction. Yeah. I have a daughter, a 14-year-old daughter in high school, and she says, you were in the sauna with guys from my school. They were talking about you.
I find many times that family will ask me, you know, how come Dad never has any pals or buddies? And the reply was, he's a private guy. And I started thinking, well, yeah, I'm not so private, but I don't look for people for conversation. We're just drawn together in some mysterious way.
There's an elemental sort of sacred feeling to the space.
And let me remind you, we're talking about a gym locker room.
We hear a lot about the epidemic of male loneliness in our culture today. So could the local sauna be the cure? Well, it couldn't hurt. For Vermont Public, I'm John Ahrens.
Many of you out there are big fans of the sauna, too. Kevin in Mount Holly writes, my wife and I built a wood-burning sauna on our property a few years ago. It has been a wonderful space to sit together during the winter months while we watch the fire and catch up away from any distractions. If you love the sauna, call in and tell us why. Who got you into it? 800-639-2211 is our number. Now, joining me for the rest of the hour in our studio at Vermont Public is Chelsea Edgar. She's a Burlington-based reporter for 7 Days, and she wrote a piece for 7 Days exploring sauna culture in our region. Chelsea, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Eric Lee, a postdoctoral researcher at the Montreal Heart Institute who studies sauna. He's published a number of papers about his work. Welcome.
Pleasure to be here.
And thanks for driving down from Montreal in your shorts, I would like to note, and a t-shirt.
Signature look.
Very hardcore. And last but not least, we're joined in the studio by Nils Schenholm, a sauna designer and builder in Duxbury. He's also a North American Sauna Society Emeritus Board member. Nils, good to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
So what I was loving from that piece from our producer, John Ahrens, was that spirit of camaraderie that comes out in the sauna. I think maybe folks who have not experienced the sauna before might think of it as like a very kind of solitary, inward-looking time to kind of recenter, refocus, which it can be. But Nils, you and I have sauna'd together, and it's quite chatty in there.
I think it depends on the flow. Sometimes people want to visit, and sometimes people just want to be quiet. I think sauna has been sort of compared to or put in the same category as church, as from a spiritual kind of perspective. And in that sense, you're not sitting and visiting; you're sitting and thinking and meditating and kind of keeping it to yourself and listening to the breath and the breath of the stove. Otherwise, it is a time to talk. I used to have the best talks, I think, with my son about important things and also friends, people I'm close to. It is a different place. I think it's the same as taking a walk sometimes when you have to talk to somebody about something really difficult or prickly. Taking a walk somehow makes it easier. I don't know why. Yeah. But the culture of the Finnish heat therapy tradition is 2,000 years plus or minus, depending on who you believe and who you ask. And I just figure they can't be wrong, so...
And Eric, you lived in Finland for many years, right?
I did. I lived there for 8 years, and I can definitely say that in the ideal world, you'd want to have a public sauna where you could go and meet folks and chat, and then you'll have your own sauna where you can sit down and just reflect and be meditative. I think that's the best balance. You might not have your own sauna, but I think if the infrastructure allows, there should be a public sauna where people could just go and, you know, meet their friends. But then there should also be like sauna turns, like how they do it in Finland, where you could book it for an hour and you could invite your friends or not, and you could just be there by yourself, which is what I had back when I was living in Finland. I had a sauna in my own building. It's like an apartment building because I was a student back then. And I just go in there for an hour every week, just in complete darkness, no candles. I just wanted to sit there and breathe. And it's great.
Mm. I like this plan of a private sauna that you can have and a public one. We'll see if we can get some government funding for
that. Oh,
yeah. Chelsea, you're a contributing editor for 7 days now, but when you were a reporter there a few years ago, you wrote this big story about sauna culture, and you went up to Canada to kind of explore some of their saunas and spas there and compared it to kind of the dearth of those types of spaces that we have here in Vermont and in our region. What did you learn?
Yeah, I was really struck by, so I went up to Balnea, which is in the Eastern Townships, and it's a completely beautiful spot. Like, we would go there and think, wow, this should cost a ton of money. It is not expensive. It's 100 Canadian bucks, so like 70-ish US dollars for a full day pass, and that includes a bunch of different saunas and steam rooms and the full thermal circuit. And what struck me on my visit, I think I went on a weekday, and in the evening, and there were so many people there of just like all walks of life, hanging out. Like, clearly there was some sort of coworker happy hour thing going on. There were families, there were couples, and it was just this very sweet melting pot of people. Compared to here, I feel like spas are associated with so-called wellness culture. You know, they're sort of marketed as a luxury, as an indulgence, and then they're usually priced accordingly. And so when you're paying those kinds of prices, there's this expectation of privacy and exclusivity, which is the opposite of what sauna culture is in much of the rest of the world. I find that kind of depressing. Like,
yeah. And so you're talking here about how sauna can be a surprisingly, in some ways, accessible thing to do to relax and to help your body. Nils, you are really an evangelist in some ways for building your own sauna and for teaching people how to make this something that they can access in their own backyards. But you also build saunas for, you know, for fancy clients with a lot of money and the ability to pay somebody else to make, you know, the exact sauna experience that they want to have. How do you think about like accessibility and cost when it comes to sauna?
I had a conversation this morning with a potential client, and I mentioned this program, and I said, you know, one of the challenges and one of the things that's frustrating for me is my clientele generally are people that have disposable income, people mm-hmm. that have extra money to spend on amenities that are important to them, and the lack of public sauna means if you want to have a stove room of your own and you can't get access to a public one, you know, the costs are pretty prohibitive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There are some DIY examples around that are pretty cool. But it is a frustrating thing. And, you know, lumber's expensive. Permitting sometimes can be an issue. There's a lot of, you know, it's like building anything else. There's challenges morning till night. But I think the fact that someone with a modest income doesn't really have enough money to spend to get a nice one. The other side of this is that in the past 7 or 8 years, modular panel-built saunas have been around since the 60s, but in the past maybe 6 or 7 years, many big companies have gotten into the market of building these kits. They are affordable, and the design and material options tend to be not that great. suboptimal is a polite way to put it. So you spend, I have to be polite here.
To spend, who, like Wayfair?
You spend $6,000 or $8,000 or $10,000 on a kit, and you know it kind of does what it's supposed to do. But one of the things that Eric and I were talking about a little bit before we started, the difference in the understanding of the culture between Finland or the Nordic countries, or there's sweat bathing culture exists literally around the world. It's not just Finland.
And even in Australia.
Of course. But the understanding, and because we're Americans and because many of us necessarily don't get it, a company selling these kits that are kind of not that great has pretty good luck at it, and they have slick marketing.
Yeah, I've put a kit or two in an online shopping cart before, and then it hasn't happened yet. But I've thought about it. Whenever it gets really cold, just somehow end up in a cart.
It's hard. it's a tough one.
Well, Nils, I know you have a lot of experience in building saunas. We're going to get a couple more tips from you later in the show, and I also want to hear more, Eric, about what being in these types of extreme heat scenarios, what it does to your body. We have to take a short break here, but we'll answer some of those questions and take your calls when we come back. Stay with us. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Today on the show, we are talking sauna. It's the first installment in a health-focused series that we are running every Thursday of this month to help us usher in the new year in good health. That's the name of the series, too, In Good Health. Our guests today are Eric Lee, a postdoctoral researcher at the Montreal Heart Institute who studies sauna's effects on the body, Nils Schenholm, a sauna designer and builder in Duxbury, and Chelsea Edgar, a Burlington-based freelance writer and a consulting editor for 7 Days who has written about local sauna culture. Chelsea, when you started this reporting journey that you went on for 7 Days, had you had any experiences with sauna before? Was this a very new thing for you?
It was pretty new. I think my only other experience of a sauna was, I don't even think I knew it was a sauna. It was a crappy gym that I went to, and there was this room that nobody was using, and it looked really dark and depressing in there. And I opened the door, it was hot, and I was like, I don't know, maybe I'll sit in here for a minute. And then I did, and it felt really good, and I was like, oh, this must be a sauna.
So when you then went to places like Balnea in the Eastern Townships in Canada, how did that experience differ?
Oh, I mean, it's totally mind-blowing. I had been to, by that point, a few other saunas, nothing like Balnea, I think. There are a number of sort of pop-up saunas. There's one in Burlington, Savu is one, and then they started in Jeffersonville originally. And so, I mean, but what's different about Balnea is, again, it's a whole campus. Like that is designed so that people can have sort of a long hang there. Like there, and there's a restaurant and whatever. The grounds are really beautiful. But yeah, I think that there is something maybe in our very deep cultural obsession with efficiency that we want these little boxes where we can go and steam ourselves up for a while and then. And it's not leisurely in the same way that Nils, you were describing, the deep conversations that you have with people, that's a really special thing, and it's hard to recreate that exact experience.
Yeah, not to generalize too much, but I do feel like Americans have a very love-hate relationship with leisure and slowing down and that type of self-care you're describing.
Right. Well, and that's why it's got to be expensive, right? Like you have to feel like you are treating yourself in some big way. Like it wouldn't be enough to just do something that's basically good for you
and cheap, good on the pocket.
Right. And just like sit still for a little while. Like why would anyone want to do that? That's so lame.
Eric, you closely study the effects that the sauna experience has on the body. Let's start with the heart. What happens to your heart when you are in an extreme heat environment? We're talking like 180, 200 degrees here, right?
So it's a good place to start. So basically, the effects of the sauna kind of mimics exercise, and in particular, aerobic exercise. So if you think about running you know, when you start running, your heart rate goes up, right? Because it needs to pump blood to the muscles that are working while you run. When we're in the sauna, at first, the heart doesn't work that hard because it doesn't feel the need to cool itself down. So in the first 2 minutes, you hardly see any kind of change physiologically. But after the second minute, coming into the third minute, you'll start to feel your heart rate go up, and then you'll see a break in the temperature and how you feel in the sauna. So basically, in the first 2 minutes, you'll feel hot. Your heart rate doesn't go up. You feel hot. And then after that, you don't feel hot. Suddenly, you won't feel as hot. So this takes a bit of time to experience. You just got to go into the sauna and just wait for the sensation to come. But then once you start to sweat, that means that vasodilation, or the expansion of your arteries, has begun. So all your blood vessels started to expand. Now your heart has to work harder to maintain the blood pressure in your body and to cool you down, because it needs to pump the warm blood from the core to the skin to allow it to cool. And then it has to bring the cool blood from the skin back to the core to maintain a homeostasis in your body. So your heart has to work hard to do that, kind of like exercise, kind of like running.
So you're saying I don't have to run anymore?
No, that's not what I'm saying. No. It's not meant to replace exercise. It's meant to supplement. So in my research, what we've tried to do is to try and look at the combination of exercise and sauna bathing to see if sauna bathing can augment the effects of exercise. So it's a very important distinction. It can't replace. It's just like meditation is something that you should do. It can't be replaced by watching your favorite TV series. Oh, I don't need to.
Says you.
Yeah. Yeah, do what I say, not as I do.
As we're talking here about the level of heat, Nils, I remember a couple years ago when I visited your home in Duxbury and we went into the sauna together, you were talking to me about the levels of heat that you prefer and can withstand. And you said above 200 degrees, if I'm remembering correctly. That's when your nostrils start to burn a little bit. It becomes a little less enjoyable.
205. It feels like the... I don't know what they're called. The little hair inside your nose starts to feel like it's on fire.
Yeah, if you breathe in deep, yeah.
So you end up. Yeah, so yeah. At that point, you switch to mouth breathing, which isn't that much fun. Yeah. The I don't know if it's the Thinner Sauna Society, the International Sauna Association. At one point, they had to answer the question, and you can confirm or clear this up for me. Mm-hmm. What is the temperature? Because people ask me this all the time.
Right.
80 to 100 C. So that's 176 to 212 Fahrenheit. Mm. That's their prescribed target. Sometimes people like to run it, and I've been trained by a friend of mine to run my sauna at around 160, because you get to stay in for a long time.
Yep.
And if you're not feeling well, sometimes having almost a nap at 160 on the upper bench for a long time is really fantastic.
I've passed out and slept in a sauna for
how long?
2 hours.
Whoa.
Two and a half.
Is that, yeah.
That
is okay
before
to do?
You stop drinking?
I wish, but it's just something that I thought I'd try.
Sorry.
So I've done a lot of these anecdotal experiments on myself and my friends. Yeah. Without ethical approval, of course. And it's one of those things. I put on a heart rate monitor and then I just collect data. So I go sleep inside the sauna.
And do you remember what the temperature was?
It's about 150, 155.
Yeah.
Low. Yeah. You can't sleep. I don't want to be the next one on the newspapers. Yeah.
Right.
I'm going to bring in some callers here before we get too much into the experimental science. Justin in Chittenden is calling in. Justin, are you a sauna fan?
Yes, I've been in saunas. I actually, my relatives are full-blooded Finns, and I've been in saunas ever since I was a few months old, and I'm now 70 years old, and my hottest sauna I ever took was 240 degrees on my 24th birthday, and sauna competitions in Finland are up to 235 degrees.
Oh, it's a competition?
Yeah, they have sauna competitions.
They have
doctors standing by waiting for the people to collapse and see who can stay in the longest. But what I'd like to tell you about, most people don't know how to take a sauna properly. And what it is, when you do it properly, first off, you don't do 240 degrees because you cannot breathe. Mm-hmm. Your lungs will not allow air to enter your lungs at 240. I just did that for the fun of it. But anyway, mostly 180, 150 to 180. 180 is a good number to look for. But you go in for a few minutes and sit at whatever temperature you want to deal with, and then you drive yourself out by throwing water on the rocks. The steam drives you out, and then you stand outside or jump into water or jump into the snow, and then when you've cooled off, so you feel like you're really cold, then you climb back in there, and then you sit in that heat again for a few more minutes, and then again drive yourself out with steam. Don't start off with steam when you enter. And if you do a cycle of this about three times, when you're done, you're going to feel totally relaxed. It is a beautiful feeling.
And Justin, thank you. I'm glad you brought up the cold plunge element of this, because that, I think, is such a unique aspect of sauna, one that I struggled a little bit with when I first started trying this out when I moved up to this northern part of the country. Eric, why is that? What's happening to our bodies when we make these big shifts between extreme heat and extreme cold?
So our skin has thermal effectors, so we feel, and it gives feedback back to our brain, our hypothalamus. But generally speaking, when you spend between 30 to 60 seconds in between these two modalities, there's not many acute changes that happen because the body's still responding to the previous stimulus. So say, for instance, I'm in the sauna for 2 minutes. Well, 2 minutes is a short time. Okay, I'll take that back. Let's say 5 minutes. And your body's now vasodilated. Like I said earlier, your blood vessels have expanded. Your heart rate's gone up. And the blood has been redistributed around your body. Mm-hmm. Now, you jump into the cold plunge and you stay there. Most people stay there for about a minute, minute and a half, max two. And so what it does try to do is to vasoconstrict. So the opposite of vasodilate is to vasoconstrict. So your blood, your arteries, your blood vessels, they start to narrow, right? They start to tighten up. They start constricting. But that doesn't happen so quickly. The response takes time. So whilst it's happening, you go back into the sauna. You're already back in the sauna. So a lot of the changes happens in the heart rather than on the periphery.
Hmm.
Yeah, when it's in such short moments. So when it's happening, unless you're saying we're going to the sauna for 10 minutes and then we're going to go cold plunge for 10 minutes. Okay. And then we're going to start seeing the change, the stressor, the effect is different, right? Because mm-hmm. if you think about, if you compare it, again, I'll use exercise because I'm an exercise scientist. If you climb up a flight of steps, you know, one flight of steps, it's like barely 30 seconds, right? You can't call that exercise. Your body's just not responding before it can start going like, oh, we need more oxygen in the muscles. We need to make our heart work harder. Oh, it's over. So it stops. So there's no response, right? So you need exercise to be longer in order for effects to happen, right? The same thing with these hot and cold modalities. You need to spend a bit more time in them.
Mm.
Yeah. Just a flash, like a 30-second dip, and then you're out. Doesn't really do much except give you a bit of a shock. And some scientists argue that there's benefits to that because of the cold shock and the heat shock response. Now, a lot of these experiments have been done on animals, so we don't know if these effects can be or would be seen in humans because we can't do them in real time, right? So it's difficult to ascertain as of now. But as far as the contrasting effects go, I don't think there's much of a complementary value between hot and cold. My stand and a hypothesis that I'm willing to test in the next couple of years with my experiments is that I believe that going into the cold prolongs your ability to stay in the heat. And this lengthened heat exposure is what gives you the health benefits. not the cold itself per se, if you guys can follow.
Gotcha. You just got a fist pump from Nils. So we'll be following this research very closely. I want to share a couple more emails that we've gotten during today's show. Felix in Brattleboro writes, I was born and grew up in Germany, lived there until my early 20s when I moved to Vermont. Germany has a very widespread and deep sauna culture. Growing up almost every Sunday, my parents, my sister, and I would go to a public sauna for our weekly spa day. Even as a six-year-old, I was already obsessed with it. It was always co-ed, nudity required, super affordable, and a family-friendly atmosphere that I really miss so much. 2025 will be the year that I build my own to bring the culture back here. Speaking of getting that access to saunas in this region, Chelsea, you have followed the story of this this project in Burlington to build a sauna spa situation that has unfortunately not come to pass or not yet come to pass. Can you tell us a little bit about these plans?
Yeah. So the Silt Bathhouse is what you're talking about. And that was slated for construction and in the Barge Canal Superfund site, basically this contaminated brownfield. And they there was a federal grant to, you know, decontaminate, to clean up the site. And it just wasn't going to be quite enough money to do the work that needed to be done. So that is no more. And Jovial King, who was behind that project, says that she is looking for another site to build the bathhouse. So, yes, that there was the bathhouse that was not.
The bathhouse that was not.
The bathhouse and, that was not.
And I can imagine that because a sauna or bathhouse, it requires a lot of water, a lot of like natural space too, that it really needs to be in a place that is kind of in healthy concert with the natural environment.
Right. If you're talking about, again, a large sort of campus environment that is, you know, very resource intensive. You know, I am aware of some very, you know, hyper local off-grid saunas around the state, the locations of which I am not at liberty to disclose on the air.
Wow.
But I think that that's part of the problem that, you know, that we've sort of touched on here, that, you know, in this sauna deprived culture, everybody has a spot and they want to keep it secret so people don't come, which is not the point of saunas. Like, that just seems like a very fixable problem. You know, build more saunas. I am frankly very tired of saunas being cool. I just think they should be normal.
So cool as in like hip, that
cool as in hip.
See them as sort of like an elite special thing,
right?
To
like
go to.
Do you know about this sauna? Oh, what about this sauna? Like, no.
Nils, I bet you agree. Maybe not.
We just have the public ones that I've been involved with over the years. The majority, three quarters of them, and maybe up to maybe 30 altogether over the years, three quarters of those are connected directly to resorts. A resort like Sugarbush, Stowe, Okemo, Stratton, what am I leaving out? Smugs, Bolton. They have a reliable revenue stream. And they have real estate money, and they have a very diverse income stream, so that they can afford to make these amenities. When sad news is, they're usually not, you know, all that nice.
And are they truly available to the public, or do you have to?
Some of them,
resort?
Some of the ones I'm familiar with, you can get a day pass, but it's expensive, and. I think, to go back to the George Carlin comment, we sort of have a cultural habit of shooting ourselves in the foot when it comes to doing fun, worthwhile, therapeutic things. One of the things that the North American Sauna Society worked on from the beginning, and I was on the board for many years, and we would have these meetings once a year. We used to meet at the Finnish consulate in New York, which was a lot of fun. But, you know, we would try to come up with ways of encouraging proper public sauna design and construction in the United States. And it has always been difficult. So it remains a kind of a niche culture, and your off-grid ones that you're talking about. Yeah, I mean, we all need it somehow.
Yeah.
I've really wanted to be involved with a low-key version, but haven't had any luck yet finding the right site and the right investors.
Well, it seems like there might be a lot of Vermont Edition listeners who are interested in that vision. Anna writes, since moving to Vermont 14 years ago, it's been hard to find a good sauna. When I lived in Michigan, you would almost always find a cold plunge associated with the sauna and a place to lay down outside. Combining the cold plunge with the sauna really heightens the experience for me. I'm not sure why New England hasn't incorporated the traditional use of the sauna yet. There'd be no need for that after-work martini if everyone had a sauna and knew how to use them. Well, let's pause here for a short break. When we come back, we are going to take a couple more calls and continue this discussion of sauna culture in our region. This is Vermont Edition. Stay with us. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. If you're just joining us, this hour we are discussing the physical and mental benefits of the sauna as part of our weekly January series, In Good Health. Our guests are Nils Schenholm, a sauna designer and builder in Duxbury, Chelsea Edgar, a Burlington-based freelance writer and consulting editor for 7 Days, and Eric Lee, a postdoctoral researcher at the Montreal Heart Institute. Let's dive right back into the phone lines here. We have Janet in Ferrisburg, who's been waiting patiently on the line. Janet, go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to ask what the similarities and differences are for taking a long hot bath or a short hot bath. And in the conversation, people have brought up different lengths of saunaing and going out or not going out, blah, blah, blah. So I'm just curious, what are the similarities or differences between different kinds of saunaing and also a hot bath?
Oh, great question, Janet. Eric, I'll throw this one to you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that is a great question. And I think with regards to the length, right, the jury's out. I mean, we don't have enough experimental evidence to tell us one way or the other whether it's longer is better for you or shorter is better for you. There, however, seems to be a maximum tolerable limit in terms of duration that you spend. So a group of researchers over in Coventry University in the UK, who I've spoken to and worked quite closely with, they've done their studies in hot water immersion, so in a hot tub. And I've done my studies in sauna. And in our pilot phases of our research studies, generally we want to test a tolerance level and how well people can tolerate before we actually launch full scale. And the limit's 15 minutes. 15 minutes continuous, single bout, no exit, no shower, no breaks. Hmm. For users who use hot water immersion, and we're talking about 40 degrees Celsius, when you get close to 15 minutes, they'll feel faint, dizzy. They'll have symptoms of syncope, very much similar to sauna users who sauna bathe for 15 minutes straight. Now, I'm not talking about people who are already acclimated to sauna use, because your body adapts. Like, I can spend 20 minutes straight, no problem. But for people who are naive or who generally don't use the sauna all too often, once a month, once every couple of months, you need to be careful of the safety aspect. Now, with regard to Janet, what's her name? With regards to Janet's first part of her question about a warm shower, now, there's been some research to suggest that warm showers can be beneficial to your health. However, there's very few of those studies, and a lot of those are quite old. What they've done is to show that long, warm showers are good for you, but they didn't say that short, warm showers aren't good for you. Mm. Yeah, it's just based on what the researchers have done in their experiment, right? So really, we can't answer that question completely too. Mm. But what I can say is, if you do use... Okay. In terms of subjecting your body to heat, whether it's hot water immersion or whether it's the sauna, there are three components like exercise that you need to look out for. You need to look out for your frequency. How often are you going? You need to look at the duration. How long are you spending in there? And then you need to look at the intensity. How hot is the temperature? It's just like exercise. How often do you exercise? How long do you exercise for? And at what intensity do you exercise? So with heat exposure, it's the same thing. If it's hot, 180, 185 Fahrenheit, then you might not spend so long. If you don't spend so long, maybe you go more often, 4 times a week, 5 times a week, if you can afford it, or if you have your own sauna at home. But then the thing is, how do we balance these three things, right? So my advice for all sauna users who listen to this program and worldwide, whoever gets a hold of this, start having a sauna log. People go to the gym, they log their exercise, number of reps, number of sets. When they run, they have their Garmin watch to tell them, like, oh, I've covered 10 kilometers today, 5 miles, whatever. You need to have a sauna log for yourself, right? I've done 15 minutes today at this temperature, and then for the week, how long? So you understand how much thermal stress and heat load you have subjected yourself to.
Let's bring in another question here. We have Sabra in Norwich on the line. Sabra, go ahead.
Hi, Michaela. This is a great show. I heartily endorse the idea and the completion of public saunas in Vermont. Yeah, I have a question because going to gyms or like aquatic centers or whatever, they do have saunas available, but you're going from a chlorinated swimming pool or what they call salt water but chemical treated a swimming pool, and then you're going into a sauna and opening up your pores of your skin, which is the largest organ of your body. And I've always wondered when I've done that, like, oh, like, am I just, is this like detrimental to my health? And so if anybody knows about that, I'm really curious. Thanks so much.
Nils, what are your thoughts on that?
I can't speak about the skin aspect, but I can definitely speak about the fact that unfortunately, many public saunas are the stove room, the sauna room, is immediately adjacent to the pool deck. And sauna has to breathe, has to be ventilated, typically in a residential setting. They're natural ventilation, gravity, no fans. Mm-hmm. In commercial settings, often there'll be mechanical ventilation. But in any case, the room can be breathing from the pool deck, which is chlorinated air. And that, to me, is right out of the gate, I think, more of an issue for the situation the caller is mentioning. This is a very, very common mistake. But the whole exchange of...
Yeah, Eric, do you know if there's an issue with chlorination and going into your pores?
I am not too sure. I do it myself, too. I go for a swim, and then after that, I use the sauna. But then I always make sure I take a shower after.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Should be pretty safe.
Let's go to Kurt in New Haven next. Kurt, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I got started with the show, with the sauna. I was a student at the Evergreen State College. Mm-hmm. I'd gone to college there because I had a pretty bad injury, and I spent the first 2 years swimming every day and then going into the sauna afterwards. So that made me decide if I ever got to build a house, I was going to build a sauna into it, even if the house was only 10 by 10. But I was able to build a house bigger than that, and it does have a sauna in it. I just wanted to push back a little bit on the, you know, saying how expensive it is to have a sauna. I mean, a sauna is just a little room with a stove in it, really, and you can make it as palatial or rustic as you want. And lots of these stoves people are replacing in their houses now, wood burning stoves are perfect to use a sauna situation. So anyway, that's my comment. Really enjoyed the show. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Kurt. You did get a bit of a shake of the head around the wood stoves from Nils. And Nils, I know you have a lot of opinions on how to make a perfect sauna. What were you thinking just now?
Well, I like the can-do aspect of the caller's approach. And in fact, I have a neighbor right on the same road that I live on up on the mountain in Duxbury who built a sauna, and I think his total budget was $1,100. And it's a little, cool little building out in the woods next to his house. He was a first-rate scavenger, Norwegian guy, as it turns out. But one of the things that many local homemade saunas up here in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, in New York, in Massachusetts, places, southern New Hampshire, a lot of the homemade saunas use wood stoves that they get a yard sale for $100 or $50, or somebody gives you one because they're done with it. The difference between that stove from a performance and safety standpoint, an efficiency standpoint, and a proper finished design built, purpose-built wood stove is night and day. So good for you to have your system running. And I've always said that the most, the best measure of the mark of success of a sauna is how much it gets used, cared for, and loved by the people that use it. So bravo. But conventional wood stoves for sauna are really kind of suboptimal. Mm. There we go.
So maybe investing in one that's built for that could save money in the long run, too.
No, it's just a different efficiency. It's a different experience.
Gotcha. Mm. Okay. We only have a couple minutes left here, and I'm guessing, you know, we've had a lot of people call in who have deep sauna experience, but I'm guessing we also have some folks who either are new to this or who have never done it before. If the show has maybe convinced some of them and they're curious about it, Chelsea, I'm wondering if you might have any advice for a first-time sauna user on how to go into the experience.
I mean, just go into it. No, I mean, I don't really have anything profound to say, but just I think going in and just being willing to sit for a while, as we've talked about, it takes a long time to truly start sweating. Like, you think you're sweating, you feel little beads of sweat, and then like 20 minutes later, you are sweating on a completely different level than you have ever. Like, you're sweating in places that you did not know could produce sweat. So I would advise people to try to go the distance.
Eric, any advice for new sauna users from you?
Be brave. Don't let them get to you. Like any other sport or endeavor in the world, there's going to be haters. There's going to be a-holes who will tell you, will try to tell you what to do while you're
sauna haters.
Yeah. So, I mean, go there, be polite, have an experience. And if you like the experience, it's your experience. Don't let other people taint that experience for you. So just be brave.
Nils, any advice for first timers from you?
Well, a couple of absolutely right on comments. I think that a proscriptive approach to anything can be a little bit of a dangerous thing. I have this conversation routinely with clients, and some of the people I work for are really new to the culture. So there are some basic guidelines, but there's no we had a caller earlier who went through a very strict kind of regimented this, do this, do this, do this. And I've just found that to be not very helpful over the years, because we're all different. Mm. If we all went in a stove room right now, I will bet all the money in the room that somebody's going to get up sooner than someone else to go out and cool off. It's just the way it is. So, being open-minded, there is research you can do, but again, a lot of what's on the internet these days is put there by people that may not actually know with any depth and breadth what it is they're writing about. So you got to kind of be careful.
Well, we'll link to your research, Eric, in the notes for today's show. I do want to end with an email that we just got from a listener that made me smile. Their name is Cindy, and they write, "I am of Finnish and Swedish descent. My mom grew up in Port Chester, New York, in a Finnish community, and she speaks fondly of the sauna culture that she grew up with. She has a funny story that when she was a young girl sitting in the sauna, a loose cow came in for a soak. Here in Vermont, we are fortunate to have friendly neighbors," Cindy writes, "who have a sauna. During this time of year, my family takes a sauna once a week. We do cold plunge in the nearby brook, or if there's fresh snow, we'll all roll around for that cooling effect." Well, thanks to everybody for participating in this conversation about saunas. Again, it's the first in our weekly January series called In Good Health. Nils Schoenholm, a sauna designer in Duxbury, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Eric Lee, postdoctoral researcher at the Montreal Heart Institute, thanks for driving down.
Absolute pleasure.
And Chelsea Edgar, freelance writer and consulting editor for 7 Days. Thank you so much.
So fun to be here.
And you can find Chelsea's article on 7days.com, and we will also link to that in our show notes. Today's show is directed by Aaliyah Papes. Our managing producer is John Ahrens, and our show is produced by Andrea Lorien and Daniela Fierro. Our call screener today was Rick Barrett, and our theme music is by Myra Flynn. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Thank you so much for listening, and we will catch up again soon.